This Dharma talk was given to the Clearway Zen Sangha by Lotus Vu. This talk is made available free of charge. More information about Clearway Zen can be found at www.clearwayzen.ca.
When I was a teenager, well, a child, around 10 to 17, one of my duties, go to Dharma talk, mom. Sit in front of teachers towards the talk. Little Sony Walkman. You know how expensive they were? And before they came up with auto reverse, the recording, my job was to sit there, wait until the tape ends, you know, and the button pops, and then I flip it over quickly, pop it back in, press record. And it wasn't just for my mom, it was for a whole group of women in the temple. They'll kind of dub it again and pass it around. Vietnamese people, especially a lot of Sri Lankan practicing Buddhists, feel that learning the Dharma from Dharma talk. And so there was a famous teacher from France, named Thich Quang Vinh, quite famous in the Vietnamese community worldwide. Contemporary, probably a little, basically has a temple in every major city. And he would travel around and he established a temple in Toronto, which I attended. He was the Dharma master. We categorize types of master in Vietnam. We have the Dharma master, kind of scholastic, the Dharma in very regimented way. And then there's the Zen master, helps meditate. And then there's the precept master, who holds precepts and who makes sure everybody follows the line. And there's the ritual master, does all the rituals and rites and celebrations and all whatnot in the temple. So this person was a famous Dharma. Would have these wonderful poems that he writes about the Dharma that helps you remember the Dharma. And I remember one of his famous poems that talks about, which is very unforgettable. It says, on the way, there's nothing like diligence. On the way, on the path. Nothing like the wisdom of our life. Wandering through samsara, diligence helps you overcome everything. And in Vietnamese, it sounds very poetic, it rhymes. But it's got all these nations. Until years after, it's probably the most important thing that you need to know in the practice. Now, when we practice Zen at first, we might think that diligence is about setting time aside every day to get on the cushion. Spend 30 minutes or an hour on the cushion. Get that discipline in to make sure that we do our practice regularly. And when we miss a day, eating ourselves in. That's not really diligence. But it's discipline, but it's not diligence. Okay? Discipline usually comes with a whip. Diligence is about being present. Remember here. When anybody asks you, where are you right now? Say nowhere. Which is another word for now here. Diligent practice of continuously observing this. And I mean by yourself is the whole mess of entanglement that comes and goes. Right? Not just what's happening outside, but leave a little attention for what's happening. So, when you go about your day, pay attention to what's going on. We're scrubbing away at our kitchen table, our counters, washing the dishes, and our mind's going, oh, God. Tomorrow, what's going on? Anxious, anxious, anxious. Where am I going to get money for my bills next month? Oh. Guess what's happening when that's happening? Not here. You're not diligently practicing to observe the. You even know what you're doing, or you're on automatic pilot. Next thing you know, put away the jam in the cup with the glass. In Zen temples, if you ever visit one, they have working practice where the whole temple is clean, inside out, sweeping outside, inside, all this. Why is that a practice? Because when that happens, we are carefully watching our mind. Buddha says, do not think about the past. Not wondering, the past is no more, the future is yet to come. And as the modern Eckhart Tolle, spiritual teacher, he's kind of hippie, says, there's no past and future, all you're just doing is lost in your thoughts. So what happens when you see yourself be lost in thought, past? Notice the effect that has on your body. Where's tension? Bring attention back to the body. And when we observe our body, we will notice. Love. The tension. Especially when we're thinking about the future and catastrophizing something. The tightness in our chest, the nostrils, the stomach. Think about the past, for the regret, things we want to change. Well, essentially try to change something that is no more. But our programming is such that this goes on. As the sixth patriarch said, do not worry about delusion arising. Be more diligent about letting. So when you see soft their eyes. Bring your attention back. Take a deep breath. Out and back. Notice the tension in you. What happened to that thought now? It's gone. For the longest time, I didn't know how to teach people how to let go. And some students ask, how do you let go? Well, you just let go. You know, like you're grabbing something in your hand. How do you let go? You just let go. Then I realized after a while, people need more precise. By placing attention into your body, taking a deep breath, and with the exhale, relaxing your body and the muscles in it while holding attention in the body. Again. By the time you finish, stop, drop. It has been let. And you can do the same with emotion, good or bad. Dying, sorrow. We can't decide whether the arising in ourselves will happen. Because we have a body, we have faculties, we have an unconscious that's got all kinds of programming in there. It's gonna arise. Question is, how long do you like the drama to go on? Days of our life? Remember how long that drama ran for? Give me all these age references here. Or the young and the restless. No. The only choice you have is to decide how long that runs. With every breath, every thought, every faith, every emotion. You decide how long that period. So if you go about your day, remember this again. For all your waking moments, how much practice. If anyone has visited Plum Village or any Zen monastery, you would notice that sometimes they ring the bell, hit the bell, and everybody just stops in the middle of what, and they have to drop it. And for chronic control freaks, it's pure torture. And you have to stop, take a deep breath, and breathe. Now, the Japanese Zen monastery is even more intense. The Japan monastery is a little more gentle. Just drop it for a moment when the bell gets hit. Take a deep breath for a minute or so. You go back. Japanese Zen monastery is important. To drop what you're doing. So I was listening to a podcast that talks about Marshall Linehan, the famous Zen master, scientist, researcher that comes up with therapy. He spent 3 months at a Zen Japanese Zen monastery. It drove her. Why? Because you'll be in the middle of sweeping and have a pile of dust right there, and then the bell rings. not only has she has to drop it right there, she has to leave it afterwards. And if you're one of those people who are conditioned and trained to finish stuff, it drives you crazy. But you have to learn to let go. There's a lot of things in life. When you truly embody and bring the practice to everyday life, you realize that there's a lot of things that you have to actually let go in the middle of it. There's no way you can finish it. There's no necessary ending. That's just how life works. Even more pronounced in Generation Z, they've got something called ghosting. There's no endings in that regard, isn't it? Huh? You meet one person, oh my God, okay, can I see you again? Online dating sort of thing. Oop, they disappear. No explanation, nothing. Yeah, things are left unfinished. That thing would like this. But we're conditioned that no, the good thing. Sorry. Yes, of course, it's nice to do that. But that's up to us, that we can control. That's not necessary life about other people. As one philosopher puts it, hell is over. You can't control all the people. So learning to let go. So take our practice to everyday life, present. To realize that we're lost in our head and it's unnecessary. One of the most profound things I learned from Pitya Khan since I was a child. I'll go talk. Is that every single talk and retreat, you take us walking around. We walk all the time. Why don't you use that opportunity to practice? So when I had my office, I purposely leave the copier across the room. So every time I print something for work, I have to get up and walk across the room. And in that distance, I remember to come back to notice my feet touching the ground. And as this carried on over the years, it became a habit. And also washing the dishes. Very relaxed. That's the thing that says you're walking, you don't need thinking. You just need your feet moving. You're washing dishes. You don't need thinking. You don't need to plan where to do next with the dishes. Just need to walk. Even on you're on the loo. You go to Plum Village, they have a poem right in front of you when you're on the loo, reminding you to be present. And you might think this is unusual of Thich Nhat Hanh's monastery. No, every Zen monastery is like that in Vietnam. They have a poem for every activity to remind you. Literally posted everywhere around. In the kitchen, on the walk trail. In front of you in the loop. What they're trying to do is to create an environment when you can't escape practice. Mm. You have to practice. It's harder for us at home. It's harder for us when we go to work. I'm lucky enough that I'm self-employed. I have my own office, so I can create my own environment. I'll put up reminders around my office. Signs that everybody would appreciate. Like, don't take life seriously. You'll never get out of it alive. So I have these signs around my office. Just to remind me. And install the chime clock that every 15 minutes gets tired. I remember that. Like the bell, put your hands on it. So, when you add all of those moments during the day, is it more than an hour? It's a lot more. So the challenge in the beginning is to get on the cushion and stay on the cushion for the first hour and sort of very hard. That's why beginners need social support. Come here and sit with us.
Right? I started falling.
That's okay. And that's why you need to come to sit with a Sangha, because need to learn, number one, the proper posture. Number two, no matter how uncomfortable it is not to get up, use social conformity. Remember the first time I sat down for meditation? Nobody taught me how to sit. And they were sitting for an hour the first time. So I was sitting there in pain. Wet day. I was about 10, 11 years old, and we were getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I went with my mom, but she bribed me to go. But there was 100 people sitting in the hall. You don't move when there's 100 other people hearing you movement. Right? And unfortunately, that's the best way to learn how to practice, because by yourself, you would never, never allow yourself that kind of tolerance. Do social then. Why you do that? The bigger it is, the more embarrassing. So you don't. And so you're forced to confront your own mind, your own discomfort, your own relationship to the discomfort. And then you notice, after a while, that relationship changed. The itch is still there. The pain is still there. But your relationship with it. And it no longer bothers. And I think that's the toughest part of beginner's practice. For people who've been practicing for a few more years, this attitude of, oh, I've been, I know what I'm doing. As soon as you say that, you're working. Your mind has closed off, right? Remember that Zen mind is beginner's mind. It's to have this fresh view into our practice as always, that we are a beginner. Keep our mind open. See new things. Learn. Because every moment is fresh. Every moment demands diligent practice. someone would tell me 35 years ago that I spent 20 years in glory's presence, I would tell you to pray. But that's exactly what I did after my cancer. And boy, that presence is giving. There's no ending. The depth. So on the path, nothing rivals the diligence practice. From the diligence practice arise your wisdom, the wisdom from seed there. Venerable Thich Nhat Hanh would say, nothing rivals with such strength. Being lost and wandering in samsara, only diligence will get you out of it and over everything. So no matter what life throws at us, what challenges lie unfolding in the present, just know the difference between you now and you before is that you know what to do. Questions only to apply. So there was a Zen master in the past, China. Sometimes call out his name. And then he would answer, oh, yes, here. Yes. And he'll tell himself, remember to practice. And he'll answer, yes, sir. And that was how he reminded himself. And when you remind yourself, yeah, and the thought arises, I am here. You're not here. That has an answer, but with thought, you're not here. Or the really juicy one, like even one of the Dharma. Or Dharma activity. Oh, shoot, did we plan that? Can you do it right now? No, I'm in the middle of washing dishes. Okay, leave it. You see? So in observing the present all these years, I noticed there's thoughts that are useful for that moment, and there's thoughts that's completely useless for that moment. And those useless thoughts are probably, unfortunately, 99% of the time. The useful ones are interesting. Because once they come up, say some thought about work, planning something, writing something, when they come out, you're very focused on them, you're very absorbed in them, you forget the time. And then when you're done with it, like, oh, wow, what's happened? Right? But the useless ones, they're just around to suck your energy. I love the movie The Matrix. You are the battery. And your thinking mind, your emotional mind are the fan, the plug that keeps plugging. So you are buying your energy on the grid. By your electricity. So as you observe the present, your everyday life, ask yourself, do I need thinking when I'm walking? Do I need thinking when I'm washing? Do I need thinking when I'm eating? Do I need thinking? Nope. There's a lot of activity in your day that don't require thinking. Matter of fact, the only time you need thinking is when you're sitting in front of the computer doing some work. When you go on social media, you're trading your thinking for somebody else's thinking. They're thinking for you, and they'll think you stupid. Honestly, there's been studies done that the more you're on social media, the more you're IQ. It's true. Why? Because it kills your attention span. And attention is something we seriously need to take new information. And the ability to process information is directly correlated. Ability to understand and absorb. So what about when we're not thinking? You're like, okay, I'm present. Yes, but you notice there's a cloudiness goes over your mind. You ever watch TV and your eyes is kind of cloudy, it's too dry? And you need eye drops to put in to make it more clear? That's called mindfulness. Look into your mind, your body, and you're not thinking, but you're in half vegetative state. Haven't had a little bit too much. Know the feeling, right? That the Buddha called lost. I don't know who translated that word. By the way, it's so divorced from whatever's happening. I call it cloudy. Cloudy mind. There's a lack of clarity. I mean, tomorrow's the very last day. Our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, will be Prime Minister, and we'll be legacy will be remembered, legalized GOAT. Right? A lot of people call him GOAT. And I've never tried any other drugs for, out of curiosity, I tried those once, twice, when I was 30. And that was my post-Ken Show experience. So by that time, I already had a substantial amount of meditative experience. I was wondering, because it was so cloudy. Yes, it makes you relax, but the relaxedness is so cloudy and distorted. Compare that with the Zen practice in the jhana, with all that relaxedness and incredible clarity. There's no comparison. There's no comparison. If only those people smoking marijuana know that they can do this practice and it has the same effect except with incredible clarity. That allows you to enjoy life. I call it enduring instead of 98 telling that's what it's like when you go through life being awake, walking around with crystal clarity versus 1980. You remember. I was digging some old TV drama in the 80s, and I watched it again just for the heck of it, and I thought, oh my God, did I really watch that stuff? It is so unclear, right? You don't know what it's like until you got Blu-ray or, you know, high definition. And now 4K. Ever still. What a huge difference. And the practice is that we have to continuously light the torch in our existence, bring clarity to our presence, so we can tell the difference between non-clarity and clarity. Otherwise, we'd be living with 1980 television set and thinking, this is really good. Right? Telling ourselves, this is great. I can see everything. That's because you don't know the difference. And if you know the difference, you don't remember what the difference is. And that's why it's so vital in the post-Kensho practice. Before the Kensho practice, to be diligent. In the post-Kensho practice, even more diligent. Why? Because if you go practice, what a waste. But if you keep waking up, you can tell the difference. You're like, why am I watching? It doesn't make sense. I like life. Or 4K. Vibrant and alive. So after a while, I realized that Zen practice is about life. Is embodying the present moment. Yeah. And as a Star Trek fan, I love this book. You will be assimilated. After a while, the practice takes over your life. Your life is no longer, but this ending, mysterious unfolding. Bye. From the moment you wake up, see the arising process. In the falling. See the approach. And then you go, oh, liberation. You see all that movement with this passion and fascinating. Oh, wow. You know? And tell me, is there a final destination? Yeah, final destination. You never. Because escaping it is suffering. What you're essentially doing is just being in your head. You're just being in your head and you're still here. Creating anxiety for the hair. Or regret for the hair. So how do you like your hair menu to be? Freedom? Or just cooked up some bad meals? I feel that, well, I know my job can never get. The teacher's job is to keep reminding people. Remember. Your hand spent the entirety of life telling me you are alive. And the other guys look at him, oh my God. How can something so simple be so powerful? Yes, it is. We like to complicate. What are the strategies? What are the different methods? Different minutes. I'd love the Theravada change track, but I realized after 10 shows, that you don't have to know it. You just keep letting go, let it go in the present moment. Keep doing that all the way. Fine. If you want to be a teacher, yeah, that's great. Go learn all that. To communicate with people, give people instructions, but that's only because you're too tied up in all the concepts. So you have to use concepts to knock off some of their concepts. To guide them back to the present. Whatever they're clinging to, use a concept to combat against their concept that they're clinging to. Knock it off. So, useful in your identity. Kind of condition eventually to become a Zen. Nobody wants. Benefit's not that good. If your conditioning just unfolds eventually, leads you there. Great. To know all those steps, those teaching. For liberation to happen, you don't need. And if you're stuck, come to the Zen teachers. Right? Like the quickest way to go up to Mount Everest with them. Can watch a bunch of YouTube videos. Hopefully learn how to go up there. You might die on the way. Or read some map, try to learn how to climb Mount Everest. No. Get a ship. No, I always wonder about those guys climbing mountains, you know, because They always climb and then they take a picture and put the flag up. Like, yay, I did it. And behind them, there's a Sherpa guy that climbed it 100 times. That little guy must have climbed it hundreds of times. To be the one planting the flag going, yeah, I've done it 1,000 times. Versus the guy, you know, the European or whatever.
Yeah.
Japanese guy that climbs it first time, puts the flag on there. The funny thing is, when you are present, you see all kinds of funny things in life, just like what I saw there. I walk around the city, I walk around Toronto at that time, see so many things that are funny. Right in front of City Hall, Toronto, there's a plaque on the wall, on the ground. This is Hong Kong Hope Tree, donated by Hong Kong. And then just a stomping shop. But you wouldn't miss it if you weren't it. Right? Funny things like that. Oh, whatever. Funny things like that. You walk around life, you see. When you are present. Neat stuff. So practice. Nothing else will take you out of it.
This podcast is created by members of the Clearway Zen Sangha. If you enjoyed the talk and wish to show support, donation information can be found on our website, www.clearwayzen.ca. Thank you for listening.